Okay, so welcome to another edition of Interviews with Design and Marketing Gurus. I'm Dan Flood, and I'm here today with a gentleman by the name of Min Nguyen. And Min has been a good friend of mine for the past couple of years, and I have watched the development of him and his company, and it's really been astounding. What's interesting about Min is he's found a way to leverage social media as kind of the core of his business. Min is the founder and driving force behind an online fashion community called Mahal Style, and I've watched this community grow over the past 2 years or so into an amazing, vibrant community of followers on social media such as Facebook, Twitter, blogging, forums, and to the untrained eye, to my eye, it seemed like almost like magic how it was kind of growing, and I was kind of wondering what kind of tricks they were doing. So I'm real excited to be able to pick his brain today, and I'd just like to welcome you, Min.
Hey, Danny. Thank you for having me with you.
Great. So why don't you just, you know, kind of expand on that introduction and tell us all more about what you've done?
Yeah, I think you covered all the bases, but just expand on it a bit more. I'm the director of photography for Mahal Style. I'm a self-taught photographer, and I do most of the online marketing and community building for Mahal Style as well. Anything else you want to know?
Well, yeah, tell us you know, where you started and how you learned this stuff, how you learned social media to grow your business, and you know, some of the revelations that you've had along the way, and not, you know, just kind of just give us a brief.
Sure. Well, Mahal Style was started in 2009, and it really started, which is me and the co-founder, my wife. We started with very little knowledge and actual experience with online marketing, but I actually drew on my experience as a leader and a manager of a large group of people at a company I used to manage, and I apply a lot of those skills, team building skills and marketing strategy.
So where are you now? Like, how is it, what point has it grown to?
We actually started the Facebook campaign in 2010, so it's actually only been a year, roughly over a year. We started from scratch, and we had zero followers, zero fans, and it grew kind of organically. It grew from, you know, within the first couple of months, we got a couple hundred fans, and then we built from there. So today we're at 50,000 fans, and that's 50,000 within.
That's amazing.
Thank you. But it's all very achievable results. I know people that have been able to done more in less time, and they call that kind of the viral approach to marketing. They try to grow the fan base as quick as they can, monetize it, and move on to the next niche market. What we want to do is we want to build upon a good philosophy and build upon a good base, and grow more organically, where we have real people that are really interested in what we do,
right?
And people that can really spread the word of what we do.
And one thing that's real interesting about you too, and it's kind of unique about you, this is when I first met you, is you had a large following on Flickr. So you guys kind of started out, you know, kind of just posting your photos up on Flickr, and then transferring that over into Facebook as Facebook was becoming more and more relevant. And I think that's probably where you sort of developed your initial philosophy and kind of, you know, kind of the testing ground for the social media campaigns that you've built. Can you talk about how you started with just Flickr and then transferring that into Facebook, or some of your philosophy when you're dealing with Flickr and that type of stuff?
Yeah, that's a great point, Danny, and I'm sorry I forgot to include that, but Flickr really was our first test bed for how well our philosophy and our theory of gaining influence and a large following or a large community. Flickr, for you that don't know, is an online photo sharing site that quickly grew into a community-based website. So it's kind of like Facebook, but is largely based around amateur photographers. And so what we've noticed is that people respond most to direct interaction and to the relationships that they've built through the photos. The photographer community is close-knit, but at the same time, it's very subjective, you know, where people are they feel like they have the openness to, I guess, critique other people's work, and a lot of times it's not very constructive criticism. So we take the opposite approach, and what we did is we actually built relationships with everyone.
So you're focused more on building the relationships than the actual photos itself?
Right. I mean, I don't fancy myself as an amazing photographer. I mean, I can take pictures pretty right. well, but I think there are better photographers out there that don't get nearly the same attention that we do.
I think that's a great point that you just made. Like, they kind of come for the content at first, but they stick around because they like your personality. They like your character. They get to know you a little bit better, right? That's kind of what you're saying is that they come to have empathy for you. Right. So they come because of your work, but then they stick around and you build a relationship with them.
Yes.
Because they like you and they kind of but also admire your work, right?
Yes, yes. The work, obviously, is very important to have interesting work, interesting content to draw people into. But once you have their attention, it's very brief. And at that point, you have to engage and you have to create that relationship. I think online relationships are a lot like real-life, face-to-face, interpersonal relationship. You have to treat people like how you want to be treated. You know, just because you're behind a keyboard doesn't mean you can critique and kind of go overboard with what a lot of people tend to do.
Right, and so, I think a lot of people lose that fact. Like, they think because they're behind a screen and behind a keyboard that it's somehow different, that interaction is somehow different.
Right. And yeah, I mean, creating relationships is no secret, you know. It's no secret to a lot of people. A lot of people have very good relationships. Building an online community, building online influence is exactly the same way. You build good relationships, but you do it on a much larger scale, and you have the power to do it very quickly with many, many, many people at a time. So the computer, the internet, it's a tool for you to create multiple relationships or more relationships quickly.
Right. So I want to kind of address where most people are probably at, you know, the first challenge. You know, I just created a social media profile. I just created a Twitter account or a Facebook page. And the biggest hurdle is probably the first one. You know, I'm starting out with no followers. You know, nobody knows I'm here. Even if I have great content, you know, nobody knows about it yet. Nobody's following me on Twitter. And I think that's probably where about 90% of people give up. So what would you say, to people who are just starting out in this area? And, you know, I just created a Twitter page and I want to start building some relationships. I want to get my content out in front of people.
Sure. And that's kind of where we were, you know, for a couple of months when we first started. It's very, very difficult. You feel very alone because you feel like you have this great content. You're very excited to get out there, but no one's noticing you. And it's tough. But when it comes down to it, you have to have a good system. You have to have good content coupled with a good system and a good philosophy to really keep you going. It's going to be rough for the initial period, but once you have that established base of a certain percentage, a certain number, you can build upon it. So my advice initially would be to get a good system together, to be consistent, get a good philosophy together, and then work on building the content. Now, building the content initially is quite important because you have to have something that people find value or are interested in going to your page or your website or your Twitter account in the first place. So you have to have that. And building good content revolves around how much you love what you do. I mean, if you don't love what you do, if you don't enjoy it, it's going to show and your product won't be good. And as a result, you won't have the influence. So if you're a photographer, go out there and shoot pictures. You know, do the best photos that you make, the best photos that you can. And that way you can keep creating the content and keep it going. Having a few good photos or a collection of photos may get you started, but the whole point is to keep things going and build upon it. And it's very difficult without a good system to keep things going, because you might get easily distracted or
you're reacting to everything as opposed to
exactly.
Yeah, there's a couple of different directions I could go in right now. You actually did remind me of something I heard you say before when you did a social media workshop a couple of weeks ago, where you talked about finding out you're a big believer in the blue ocean strategy and determining what your unique value proposition is, like early on, and kind of using that as the backbone of your social media campaign.
Right.
How can someone figure out their unique value proposition, like creatively, like, you know, really figure out what is unique about my company, you know, because there's so many different fields out there that are, you know, very similar. How can you kind of stand out in a crowded marketplace?
Boy, that's a loaded question. well,
maybe you could talk about how you approached it, and then
for those of you that aren't familiar with it, the blue ocean strategy allows you as a small business owner to separate yourself from the existing brands, existing markets out there. You know, you take any industry, for example, you take the soft drink industry. The red ocean is the, you know, Coke and Pepsi, and they're fighting each other, and they pretty much have that market handled. But
you know, I don't mean to interrupt, but it just reminded me of something when you talk about soft drinks. There was about 10 years ago, I think there was a company called Slice, or a drink called Slice. And their unique value proposition was that, like, actually, like 5% of it was fruit juice or something like that. So they actually appealed to, like, a niche market within the soda drink industry, even though it was dominated by these big giants.
Right.
Just having that unique, that 5%
exactly.
juice right. in the soda.
The point is, you shouldn't try to make a Pepsi or a Coke clone, because you'll be fighting against these big corporations that, no matter how good you are at what you do, you're not going to succeed. So finding the slice niche is very, very important. And that's creating a blue ocean in which you're the only one in it. You're the only one swimming in it. So
what would you recommend? Like, obviously, I know there's a book called Blue Ocean Strategy.
Yeah.
Who's the author of that book? Do you know?
Kim. And Kim is one of the professors. The other is a French last name that I can't pronounce. So, but it's a very good book. It has it's an audio book as well. I recommend it. They go into a lot of case studies, and it's good. But going back to your question, how we found our blue ocean, our niche market, is that my wife is a beautician, and she does hair and makeup, and we saw that there was a need for the grassroots level of fashion. You know, a lot of times fashion is very top down, where,
like, ivory tower style.
Exactly right, where Vogue or W, very, very big established brands are dictating to millions and millions of people what to do, what to wear,
right,
what to think. And a lot of it is very political, because what they suggest usually is who's paying their pockets, you know, and we don't want that.
It's like the mindset, like a Chanel bag is no good unless everyone knows it's a Chanel.
Exactly.
Right, basically.
And we know that the market, especially with the proliferation of the internet, it's ripe for kind of a, you know, me and you level of a fashion interaction,
right.
Fashion product, fashion marketing. And that's where we started off. It's with that idea, you know. Mahal means love in Tagalog, and Mahal style means love your style. So instead of telling people what to do, we asked people what to do. And that seems to be a big part of our success, is that we found that blue ocean. No one is asking average people what they wear, what they want to do, what kind of stuff they like to wear or buy in fashion. And that's what we did. And
you know, that's a great point you just made. I think that's just an amazing observation. People don't really like dealing with companies so much as they like dealing with other people. People like them. I know the consumer trend watching firm called Trend Watching coined the term called twin suming. And in a nutshell, twin suming is basically saying that consumers have preferences. They're influenced by people who are similar to them. And so they're influenced by Dorothy would be more interested in Jane's opinion than she would be by an expert's opinion. Mm-hmm. Like for a movie recommendation, she would ask someone who's just like her more than she'd be interested in asking or getting the opinion from Siskel and Ebert, for instance.
Right. Yeah, we're seeing a trend where the internet is allowing that exchange to happen more frequently, more often. And it's more valued. I mean, look at Yelp, for example. That's a big part of why Yelp is successful. It's not the yellow pages. It's better because you're able to get people's opinion on what you're seeking.
So it's really a great tool to kind of research your market, too,
mm-hmm.
and find what people want and building your content based on the answers that you get from people or the feedback you get from people.
Yeah, during our social media workshop, someone threw out a question, and I'm not sure if this question was a tongue-in-cheek way of poking fun at our strategy, but they said, well, what kind of market research do you do?
Was I the one that asked that question?
I don't know. Somebody asked that question. And
oh, man.
And, yeah, I think it's silly because you really can't approach this new way everything is different now. Everything is changing very rapidly. You really can't approach marketing or any other aspect of business the same way that you would do 10 years ago. So market research, you almost have to build that into your philosophy. You can't just do your market research when you first start your business and forget about it. And 10 years down the road, the industry has changed and your philosophy is still the same. You know, you have to build that into what you do. It has to be a day-in, day-out type of activity. And what we do is, at the end of every interaction that we have with someone, we ask them the phrase, what's your Mahal style? And it's, I mean, it sounds like a hokey way of closing, a video segment or a conversation, but there is validity to it, you know, because in the end, what we want to do is we want to get feedback from people, and we're constantly getting new information, and that's our market research right there.
The magic is in the word you, I guess, huh?
Yes, people love to talk about themselves, and they love to give feedback.
It's everyone's favorite subject, right?
Exactly. So we
so all... someone who's smart, you know, notices that, and they take advantage of that.
Yeah.
That psychology.
Yeah, and it's a big part of building relationship. When you create these relationships, it's a two-way thing, but what we like to do is we like to sit back and listen, and we let the other party tell us what they want, what they need, and from that, we're able to strategize.
That's really a great point. And I remember I was reading a book called Inbound Marketing by, I think, Brian Halligan and Dharmesh Shah, and they give the example of the 2008 presidential campaign where they compared John McCain versus now President Obama, and how Senator McCain used social media as a one-way publishing platform, while the managers for the Obama campaign used it as a way to interact and energize people by communicating directly with them. But I can think one objection that people might have is they think, well, I don't want to get on social media and talk to people all day. You know, I have a business I got to run. I'm good at, you know, what I do. I'm good at graphic design or, you know, web programming. How can I balance social media and effectively enough? How can I devote enough time to it to make it worthwhile?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it will inevitably come up. Just going back real quickly to your anecdote with the political campaign there, I heard on NPR recently that one of the forerunners for this upcoming presidential campaign is caught, or I don't know if he really cares if people know, but he's buying his Twitter followers. You know, he hires these companies that will go out and give money to people to follow this political campaigner, and it's, to me it's quite funny because
just as a disclaimer here, we're not affiliated with either party, nor do we endorse or or not endorse either political party. So yeah. This is not political in any way. So go ahead.
No, but it does have some relevancy to what we're talking about. And to me, it's funny because just kind of like how John McCain is, you can buy your followers, and you know there is something to the weight of a big following, a big number in following. But at that point, are you buying people just to dictate to them, or are you actually getting information from them, getting feedback from them? And that's the brilliance of Barack Obama's social media campaign. And I think it was ran by a very, very young guy, fresh out of college, with very good and fresh and young ideas.
Yeah, I think his marketing manager was a co-founder of Facebook, I believe.
I'm not sure about that, but I know it's a very young guy.
Yeah.
So anyhow, just to get back to your question. Social media, you have to ask yourself, what value does it have to you? You know, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to grow a big fan base for influence, for to ultimately monetize into, you know, selling a product or what have you? I think every business, small or large, should have a stake in social media. If you can't find the time to do it, the resources to do it,
you think a lot of people take shortcuts? I just an observation I have. Yeah. You know, I notice on my Twitter page how many Twitter bots. Follow me in the hope that I'll follow them back, and I almost never do.
Yeah. A lot of people do that because they hire firms, small firms, that quite frankly don't really know what they're doing.
Or care about their business.
Exactly.
That much.
Don't really. Well, they don't know and they don't care. So, what I would suggest is instead of spending money in these companies that don't really have a stake in what you do, is to develop a good plan, a good strategy, based on your philosophy, and hire someone that shares the same philosophy.
Or train someone?
Or train someone, exactly.
Because I know that's what you did, right? You kind of built from the ground up.
Yes. And maybe make them a business partner. Maybe make them a big part of what you do.
What qualities are you looking for in someone that you would bring on to help you?
I remember we went to an Art Institute graduation portfolio show that you, Danny, suggested we go to. And I went with one of my business partners, and she asked me, she said, you know, what are the characteristics I'm looking for? Because they have these big sheets that you bring around, and you tack down the traits and the names of the people you're interested in. And to be honest, there's only one characteristic that I'm really interested in all of my coworkers is personality. Is this someone that you can see yourself actually working with? Not on just a professional level, but will you be able to work on a personal level as well? Can you develop a long-term relationship with this person?
Do you feel like they should also have extensive knowledge of the target market that you're targeting?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
So they don't have to actually be like in the fashion industry to do well with your followers?
No, I don't think they need to have. And actually, if I can have it, you know, I would rather have a blank slate. You know, a lot of this stuff is not rocket science. You know, you're not finding cures for cancer. A lot of it is very easy if you apply yourself. Having the personality to create these relationships is very important. Having a likable personality, having a personality that can adapt to change and adapt to different working conditions, you know, it's a big part of it. Everything else can be learned.
So what kind of things do you train them in? Just to expand on that.
Philosophy.
No, so you create kind of a credo or a charter.
Sure.
Could you tell me a little bit about your philosophy?
Yeah. I actually wrote something up that I might end up reading to you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's an acronym. It's called MOCHI. And it's the first part is meet and interact with anyone and everyone in your industry, in our case, the fashion industry. Second is organize, connect, and expose existing talent in your industry. And this part is important because a big part of my philosophy is to invest in and try to expose existing talent in the local industry. It's very important to me to do that. So for our purpose, it's organize, connect, and expose existing talent in the San Diego fashion industry. Third part is create a positive and mutually beneficial global community for fashion enthusiasts to share ideas and help others. So sorry, there's a bell ringing in the background. It's okay. We'll wait for it to finish ringing. But just to repeat that, create a positive and mutually beneficial global community for fashion enthusiasts to share ideas and help others. So a big part of our credo, too, is to be positive and to be helpful for others. Next part is change. Change the existing, in this case, what we talked about before, the existing oligarchy of fashion to a democracy of fashion. So change the top-down approach to a bottom-up approach, where we get info from others, not listen to the big brands out there. Second to last part is help new and support existing players in the local fashion industry. So again, it's helping is a big part of what we do. And the last part is to inspire the industry to embrace new forms of art as extensions of fashion. So together spells MOCHI, MOCCHI, meet, organize, create, change, help, and inspire. So that's a big, that's our credo in a sense, whatever you want to call it. But a large part of what we do is we want to help and connect others. What we want to do is want to create triadic relationships where we connect two parties that, before knowing us, don't know each other.
So you kind of become a connector.
Yeah, and that's what social media is, you know. We help two parties connect that can help themselves. Without us, it would not have been possible. So that's also, I attribute that to our social media success on Facebook.
Yeah, it's great. You know, before the interview, we were talking a little bit about Robert Cialdini and the six weapons of influence that he talks about in his book, Influence, just a fantastic book for anyone who wants to learn how to persuade or get good at selling. And one of the things we talked about was the law of reciprocity.
Right.
And that's kind of helping. So it's kind of like you have the abundance mindset where you're just like you're going to give and not expect anything in return. But it does come back to you in other ways, right?
Yes, it almost always comes back. And it may not come back to you in terms of monetary compensation, but it will come back to you, you know. And I'm not sure how you feel about, you know, I guess the whole existential, holistic side of business, but I really do believe in the flow of energy. You know, if you come at things with a positive attitude, it will ultimately come back to you. And the more people that you can positively influence, the better you and your local community will be. And as a result, hopefully everyone will be happy, you know.
You strengthen the others around you and
yes.
strengthen yourself.
Yes. You.
Just another note, we're recording this in Southern California, so if any of this sounds a little woo-woo-y to anyone else listening in that part of the country, we apologize. But,
No, we actually don't apologize, because this is how, you know, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, you know. There are others that claim to do a lot of things, and they put fancy names and graphics to what they do.
But they're missing that element of...
We don't care about that. Yeah, we just want the success to show, and, you know, we want our walk to walk first before we talk.
And, right. I think a mistake a lot of people make is they try to make it about them too much, and you're kind of about giving and having it come back to you, but you don't really care if it comes back to you. You're still going to give regardless.
It's
not the end.
Right. The benefit is irrelevant at that point. The goal for me is always to create the relationship.
Right.
And when you help someone, you've created that relationship, you know.
So what are some ways, if I wanted to practice the law of reciprocity online and help people, I'm sure people are trying to think, well, what can I do? Because, you know, sometimes with my physical clients that I work with, I might send them a Starbucks card or something. I can't go around sending out Starbucks to everybody on Facebook or Twitter. So how can I help people through the social media channels? Can you give me some ideas?
Yeah. It really comes down to a lot of times just saying hello, you know, how are you? You know, a lot of times just a personal tweet to someone makes a big difference. You may not feel like, you know, it weighs as much as a $25 Starbucks card, but for a lot of people, it really does, you know. I think doing little things, small things, compounded every day, turns into a big thing. So, in helping others, you can give positive, constructive criticism to someone's work. You know, that's very important. Such as our task that we do every day on Flickr, when we used to really kind of work at Flickr. Is so we would just go through and point out what's good and what's bad, not necessarily bad, but what's good and what could be improved on someone's photo. You know, that's one way. The other way is to offer your help. You know, if someone needs, for example, if someone's Facebook page needs a certain number of likes, maybe you can rally your followers around. And help them bring up their social media portal as well. Or if someone needs a certain item, a certain service, throughout your social media campaign, you will undoubtedly make a lot of relationships with people with what these other folks need, and helping them is just a matter of connecting those two. You know, there's many ways that you can help people without.
So what you're giving is kind of like emotional and intellectual benefits.
Sure.
As opposed to something physical, because I think in Western culture we tend to think so much of giving as something physical, like money or you know, time spent on a service. But you're actually like, if you think of Maslow's hierarchy, you have lower needs, which are like food, shelter, you know, air. But then there's also the higher order of Maslow's hierarchy, which includes things like esteem, self-actualization, and belonging.
Yeah.
So you're giving them a sense of belonging, and self-actualization, like they want to advance their career. So they're seeking greater fulfillment in their career. So you're providing, you know, technical feedback to others, other photographers. I read the kind of a depressing stat. It was kind of tragic in a comical sort of way recently, where it talked about the average person has, I think, 0.7 close friends. Mm-hmm. So the average person has less than one close friend, or zero friends, mm-hmm. close friends. You know, I don't know how you divide up a person into a 0.7%. But I think a lot of people maybe feel like they're isolated, you know, from others, kind of antisocial maybe a little bit. And you kind of come in, you become the light of their life, or you bring the light in their day. I imagine that must be a real addicting kind of sensation. If you can come in and kind of be the thing that gives them a smile or, you know, makes them feel good today. Mm-hmm. Then you're building your brand equity in their mind,
right.
Correct?
Right. Yeah, I think you worded that perfectly, and essentially that's what social media is. You know, you are connecting people that otherwise would be very lonely or would be zero friends, right? Obviously, a number doesn't really mean anything, but having someone that truly cares about what you do and that actually just want to talk to you and connect with you without wanting something from you is a big part of it, you know. And it can get very, very addicting.
And I think
but it's too, rewarding as
one
well.
Of the barriers that people might have towards feeling empathy, right, for you is we're too used to marketers and people who are advertising trying to get something from us. So we don't really trust. Everyone in this world is kind of looking for someone to trust, but we don't really know who we can trust.
Right.
Because if I see a coupon for a free iPod or something, mm-hmm. I know they're going to ask me for my email, and then they're going to try to get me to sign up for all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we kind of expect that.
Right.
Intuitively, we've come to been trained to expect that, and when you can kind of just give without trying to give anything in return, you know, that's cool. I think people can really respect that.
Yeah, and it's not something that that is going to give back to you immediately. You know, you can't do these things and expect an immediate short-term gain on your brand equity or monetary gains or what have you. When you build relationships and when you build a social media network or a community of folks, you have to look at it as a long-term investment. Over time, the community will grow, and as a result, your brand will grow and your business will grow as well. But obviously, it's going to take quite a lot of effort and time to do so. So I'm just saying, don't expect any quick fixes.
Right. And that's what I want to talk to you about next. You talk a lot about philosophy and the bigger picture, and I can see why it's so important to understand that, you know, coming in with the right mindset. Otherwise, you're just going to get frustrated and give up, and, you know, you're going to be jaded for the whole thing. But I want to talk about a little bit about techniques. Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to, you know, kind of your strategies that you use to promote, at least initially, because, you know, at some point you have to, you know, say, hey, you know, we're here. This is what we're all about. You know, we're about you. We're coming from a good place. So I know you did some like Facebook advertising. I know you reached out, tapped kind of into your networks a little bit to generate buzz for your brand through the social media channels. Can you tell us about some techniques and maybe like give us a couple of a couple of goodies here?
Sure. Unless you have a lot of capital to invest in Facebook ads, is with our experience, it's quite expensive to actually gain any sizable following solely on Facebook ads. Although, you know, if you craft up a good enough viral campaign, it can grow very quickly. Now, can you do that around a singular brand? I'm not exactly sure you can do that. It may work for you. You can give it a try. And it's been over a year since we've actually tried Facebook ads, so it may have changed.
What did you try? Like, how much did you spend, and what results did you get?
We spend maybe a few hundred dollars max.
Total or a month?
Total, yeah, over the span of maybe a month.
Okay.
We got, you know, pretty good result. I'd say 1,000, 1,500 followers. But
is that something value. Someone can do, like, at least initially to gain some initial traction?
Yeah, I think you can do that. I don't know how valuable those followers will be in the long term.
Okay.
You know, just because these are the folks that have been force-fed by Facebook to like your page, and how valuable they are as a community commodity later on is questionable. Your fan page can have 600 fans, but if they're true fans, people that really rally after you and spread your gospel to their friends and family, that's more valuable than having a 10,000 fan page that it's just random people that are, you know.
And it's more valuable if they come with a mindset like they found you,
yeah,
as opposed to you going out and seeking them.
A few other techniques that you can try is you have to establish that base group of folks, you know, and I think that number for me roughly is around anywhere above 1,000, so 1,000 to 2,000 is a good base to grow on.
How do we get 1,000 people?
Yeah.
How do we get that initial 1,000? Because I'm sure at some point it gains traction.
Right.
How do I get the people in the beginning?
Most people have about 100 or so fans on Facebook, or have friends on Facebook, right?
Direct
friends. It used to be that you can just tell your friends to go to your page and suggest to their friends. And through that kind of pay it forward type of suggesting, you can usually get up to close to 1,000 right off the bat, depending on how many fans or how many friends and how many friends of friends are on there. Now Facebook has turned that off, so you can't do that anymore. The only people that can suggest to you a fan page is are the administrators of that. A few shortcuts you can use is you can go on a website like Fiverr. Have you used Fiverr before, Danny?
No, I don't think I've heard of it.
It's a place where you type in what you are looking for, and you're willing to pay $5 for it, and people will respond to your ad. It's kind of interesting.
Can you pay $5 for the ad?
Yeah, you say, I want 500 friends to my fan page. I have $5 to give you. And someone, somewhere, will take you up on it. And, you know, you can try that for a quick, you know, boost, but again, it's not very valuable. So,
right.
How you get that initial 1,000? Well, you got to go out there and campaign. You know, you have to make relationships. You have to, for example, with our first 1,000, 2,000, we leverage our fan base on Flickr. To a lot of them have Facebook accounts, so we got them to join us on Facebook. So, you with your brand inevitably will have some kind of leverage that you can get, you know, you can use. For example, you have a brick and mortar store. Maybe get them, your physical clients, to tell their friends and family. Maybe, you know, something like that. But
if people don't have like that network, like the Flickr, they can use something like Fiverr just to get some initial fans. Because I think the biggest hurdle is that someone comes to your page, they only see like 5 people liking it. You know, maybe it's your 5 close friends. And we are social animals, you know. Another Cialdini weapon of influence is social proof. We do what we see other people doing. Mm-hmm. For instance, if someone, they use the example, if someone was out in the street looking up at the sky, then, you know, another person starts looking at the sky. And then, you know, suddenly you have like a whole group of people all looking up at the sky. Nobody knows why, but it's because they're observing other people's behavior.
Right.
And, you know, it's like if you see you pass by a restaurant, there's a lot of people in it, you know, you automatically think that they're good. If there's nobody in it, you know, you're just going to walk right by it. And so that's kind of like the first thing is that we need to get the little group of people, not just followers, but people that are into our stuff, you know.
Well, you have to, like I told you in the beginning, the first couple of weeks, couple of months is going to be tough. You have to put in a lot of work, you know. And you need to go out there, you know, if you're a face-to-face person, go out there and physically campaign for it, you know. If you are a kind of behind-the-keyboard type of person, you have to go out there and do that too, you know. Find other pages where you can connect with their administrator and create relationships with them. Ask them what kind of content do they need. How can you help them?
You talking about like blogs and forums?
Yeah, or other pages. You know, there. If you're a graphic designer, maybe find out the top five biggest graphic design Facebook fan page and get to know their administrator. And
go and post on their page.
Well, yeah, you have to do it very tactfully. And you have, you know, you can't just randomly post ads, but yeah.
Look at my site, you know, like me, please.
That never works. You have to create collaborations, you know. You have to reach out and say, hey, how can your brand that's established connect with my brand that hasn't been established? How can we collaborate so that we both beneficially, you know, we both will be benefited in the end?
And after you've laid the groundwork for your social media campaign, obviously, like, you come in with the right mindset, you have your value proposition together, mm-hmm. you've established yourself as a thought leader, perhaps, in the industry.
Yeah, I'm skirting around actually giving you technical detail because I want you to go out there and try it and do it yourself. There's no secret. You know, what I'm doing is not, I don't have any formal training in this. A lot of it is just going out there and doing what it is that that your philosophy is. You know, my philosophy is creating relationships. When I do that, it worked for me, and it may work for you too. But you have to at least give it a go and see what you can find out on your own.
So do you take you and your team? Do you take a collaborative approach to social media? What do you actually have your team doing? Like talking to people. But I mean, is there like a quota or anything like that? Like is someone monitoring the page during a certain time of the day, and do they send out a certain number of updates, or how do you break down the mechanics of it?
Well, we have multiple social media channels, and so my duty is to take care of the Facebook page. So I do that almost exclusively. Our Twitter account, I have a couple of people sharing the tweeting duties for that, because Twitter requires, in my opinion, more direct involvement to actually keep things going. So we split it up. You know, we have a person that does Mondays and Fridays, and a person that does Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we split that up. But you constantly have to feed these channels to keep them growing.
And so, what's your how do you manage the Facebook page? Because I know you go on there and you respond to every comment that's made. So you must go on like every day and respond to 30 comments.
Yeah. I
how do you break it down?
I try to post at least one new piece of content per day on the fan page. So be it a video or a photo gallery or a tip, you know, a link to our website, something of value, something of interest for our followers to keep our brand fresh in their minds. And then every time someone comments or like or posts on our wall, I try to directly initiate a conversation with them, you know, talk to them directly, call them by their first name kind of thing.
And you actually seem like, I notice you go to their profiles and find out stuff about them.
Yeah. I actually find that enjoyable. You know, it's rewarding to get to know people.
How do you manage your time and manage? Do you have a routine that you follow?
Well,
because you know I'm big on routines and stuff like that.
Being a global community, there isn't a time when someone's going to post on your wall. So you can't have a set time on when you're going to sit down and do this. You almost have to be constantly connected to it. But once you have a routine down, you know, it's not difficult as far as going on your iPhone, your smartphone. It's checking your page. It takes 2 seconds to do. It takes another 2 seconds to reply. You know, the the problem is when you fall out of practice, it's very hard to get back into it. So you have to constantly keep doing it. So whenever you think about Facebook, check your page. Whenever you're checking your email, check your page. You know,
there's so kind of cluster it in there with all the other stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
Because I go crazy when I have to check my email 20 times a day or go on Facebook 20 times a day. So maybe, you know, set aside an hour. And one practice I love to do is I use a timer when I work. I'll set it for like an hour and I'll devote myself to whatever task I'm doing. So maybe you're saying like when you're doing, you're sending emails out anyway.
Yeah.
Take a few minutes, not to go to your Facebook page and comment on people. Or if there's no one commenting on your page, maybe go to other pages and comment.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's there's no right or wrong way. If you work with your timer best, then maybe set out an hour a day and do it. The only problem with that is your responses will be in spurts and you lose people's attention. You know, if someone posts on your wall, they may log off Facebook for the next 10 hours, you know. And if you answer 10 hours later, you may not have their attention anymore.
They're in a different mindset.
Or they're just not online, you know. When you catch them online, that's the beauty of Facebook. It's instant. It tells them someone replied to their comment. And when you've caught them, you know, you can get into a conversation and get that relationship going. But it's to me, anyway, it's important for me to try to respond to everything in a timely manner, as reasonably, you know, as you can. Obviously, you need to sleep during the day, but try to do it. Yeah.
And we're all very, very busy people, you know, working professionals. So
it's possible. I'm telling you that it's possible. I don't think it's too difficult to squeeze this into your schedule. And I feel like it's worth its weight. You know what I mean? Compoundedly, if you do a little at a time over the course of a day, it may add up to 30 minutes, which is what you spend watching the news anyways. You know, so I think it's a more productive way of spending your time.
And I think a fear that most people probably have is that they get sucked into the social media and end up wasting time and you know, get distracted. Do you ever get distracted, or do you minimize it as distractions, like...
I welcome distraction. Distractions are good because it gets me away from thinking about work or business. You know? although when I'm on Facebook, I'm mostly working, you know, for Mahal Style. It's easy to get sidetracked, but it's okay because you're doing something positive, and as long as you don't go and check out your high school sweethearts page all the time, you know, it's okay to get distracted by new ideas and new things and actually get out there and meet people from halfway across the world. It's all right to do that, you know.
As long as you're not just like spending your time looking at your frat, your buddies from your fraternity, their pictures, old pictures and stuff.
Also, you brought up a really good point. I told you that Facebook took away the ability to suggest your friends to any page, mm-hmm. even if you're not an admin of it. When they took that away, they actually added something that's very interesting. They allow you to become your page. There's a link that you click on that says, use Facebook as Min or as Mahal Style. And that, to me, gives me a lot of power to reach out using the Mahal Style fan page to comment on other people's pages. It's very easy to create relationships that way.
Right, so you can comment not as you, but as your fan page.
As the fan page, yeah. It's very, very cool. And it's a brand new feature. A lot of people are finding good use for it. So yeah, I mean, if you are as locked in as your page, it's not just a waste of time, I think. I think you can find productive ways to spend on Facebook.
Okay, so that's really good. We covered a lot of good stuff. We talked about techniques for kind of gaining followers and getting influence. I want to talk a little bit like how to gain followers from other sites, like for instance integration through blog and through website. And another question that I know is on everyone's mind is how can I monetize this, or what channels can I eventually make my money, or, you know, how can it benefit my bottom line? So I want, first thing, let's take it one step at a time. Let's look at the first thing, which is integration. One of the big trends that's happened over the past couple of years that we've seen is social media being more and more integrated into the traditional web. Like at Google Plus, for instance, that their new social media service, and in Google search results, how they're giving results within your social network when you search for things. So like with, from your Twitter page or... So let's talk about that, and then we'll take the second one after.
Yeah, I think it's incredible what you can do now to integrate social media into your personal blog or website or your brand's blog or website. I think Facebook encouraged you to do that. You know, it's a big part of what they want to do ultimately. I think Facebook's strategy is to go out there and create an intranet within Facebook. So they want to create an internet, a mini internet within Facebook itself. And they're going to do that initially by doing these, you know, social media integration campaigns. I think it's great. I think the more you can leverage your users to become your traffic to become your Facebook fans and vice versa, the better. I think ultimately, though, the war between Google Plus and Facebook is going to dictate how we're going to be able to do that kind of work. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but I think when it comes down to it, you have to pick one or two of the biggies, you know, Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus. At the moment, Google Plus is kind of a newborn, but
as of the time of this recording,
yeah.
I don't know when you're going to be listening to this, but
right, with their resources and the way they attack problems, they will undoubtedly be the leaders in the future. And
so, I guess one of my yeah. questions kind of. I have a site, right?
Yeah.
I have my website. I have other websites. Should I integrate more social media into my website, or should I bring more of my website into social media? Because you were saying how they're having the web within Facebook, right? Yeah. So what should I do on my site that builds social media elements? Because there's a lot of like plugins for WordPress, mm-hmm. for instance, like Facebook Community. Yeah. Everyone's got, you know, please retweet this, like us on Facebook.
Yeah.
What are some ways that I can use my website? You know, let's say if I had search engine optimization going, you know, we had an interview with a great search engine optimization expert in the last interview, and use my website or my other online presence to build my social media
mm-hmm.
and vice versa.
Yeah. And well, you touched on it, and I think you answered your question. Yeah. Having those plugins, you know, active and ready on every post is great. Having the ability to like posts and galleries and photos and things on your website, which directly links to Facebook, I think is fantastic, you know.
But in order for them to really like you, I think it probably comes down to the content on your page, right? Because we talked earlier in the interview...
Yeah.
Their initial contact with you is the content.
Yeah.
So the content has to be good enough to make them want to do it, right?
Well, and you have to do both. You have to leverage both sides. You know, you have to use Facebook as a leverage to direct the traffic to your site. And on the other side of the coin, you have to direct your traffic onto Facebook. So it has to almost work together seamlessly as a team.
Symbiotically.
And same thing with leveraging Facebook and Twitter. You have to do that. You know, you have to, although there's no direct way of doing so, you still have to do it. You have to tweet constantly about your Facebook posts. You have to constantly tell people to check out your Facebook page, you know. And then there are some plugins that will actually allow you to tweet directly to your Facebook page, which will leverage your Facebook fan page into your Twitter.
Did you say tweet directly to your Facebook page?
Yeah.
Because I know there's a plugin that when you post a blog post, you can automatically tweet.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was one that integrated with Facebook, too.
Yeah.
Can you name that plugin? Do you know it offhand?
Off the top, we don't use it.
Okay.
So I've seen others use it. I'm not sure the value of that. You know, if you're desperate for Facebook content and posts, you can use that. I personally wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? Just because
you just post your content manually.
Exactly. You have more control over it. Because, to be honest, Twitter for us is not as useful as Facebook for what we do anyhow. As far as brand recognition, but it is a good way to build relationships. You know, one-on-one direct relationships. So. Integrating those two may not be the best idea, but you can still leverage the two fan bases to increase their individual counts.
Because I think the goal for most people is to get traffic to their website,
right?
Through the social media channels,
right. That's the ultimate goal for a lot of this. But
you know, we can build followers all day, and we can talk to them all day. But the end goal is you know, they get to like us, and then we say, hey, you know, I'm doing this thing, or you know, I'm selling this. Just go check it out. You know, you don't have to. I'm not hard selling you or anything, but if you like it, you know, by all means, get your wallet out and feel free to get it.
right. And that's where me and a lot of the traditional marketers differ in philosophy. You know, so I never get to that point. My end game is that community. You know, I want people to interact and share ideas freely without the threat, and I call it the threat of being sold to or spammed to. But obviously others will have different opinion on that, you know. But yeah, I think there are many ways once you get down to it to monetize from.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about some ideas as far as. You know, most people, you know, we're all in a capitalist society. You know, we have bills to pay. The goal that we're in business to make money.
Right.
You know, I don't think most people, they have hobbies that they enjoy that don't make money. Mm-hmm. But when we go to work, you know, the primary influencing factor is to make money.
Right.
So what are some ways that, you know, we can successfully make money? I know you kind of talk about building a relationship, and building relationships so important for selling. Like if I were to go to you and ask, you know, we have a relationship. If I say, hey, Min, can I borrow $100? You know, since we have a relationship, you'd probably be like, sure. I hope you would.
I don't know. What's your credit rating?
Listen to this guy. What happened to giving, buddy? Mr. Helper over here. But and it's the same challenge when you try to sell something.
Right.
When you're trying to get somebody to buy. So, you know, what are some approaches or some strategies that we can kind of use social media to leverage to actually make money in the end?
Yeah, I think I answered a bit of your question in my previous answer. It's that my goal is never to sell directly to my followers, you know. So I don't have any direct answer for you.
What about people who it is their goal, you know?
Well, from personal experience, you know, I don't have much knowledge to give you in that case. I mean, I do have marketer friends that do quite well. With selling knowledge-based products, information-based products through their social media fan base. I mean, just think about the amount of impressions that I get per day. You know, if I post one video per day, I get about 15,000 impressions. It may not seem like much, but that's 15,000 impressions per day, and that's with just one video. And if you are trying to sell something, you obviously will have some kind of promotional video or something like that, and with that kind of traffic, you know, it's quite easy to figure out what you can or cannot do with that. So
setting up a sales funnel.
I mean, the possibilities are endless, you know. It's that right. saying, if you build it, they will come. And once you build that community or that following, there isn't much you can or can't do with it.
I think it's been well documented for how to monetize through. There's a lot of information products that teach how to sell information products.
Right.
Online, you know, that's a joke in the marketing business is that most marketing products sell marketing products.
Right.
You know, yeah. Well, that's important too, though. You know, to have the sales funnel too, if that's your goal, you know, and I'm sure it is for a lot of people, not making that the primary goal.
Right.
I learned early on the value of just how great it is to, you mentioned information products, and just the simple act of creating an information product, or giving a lecture or a speech to a group of professionals, university students, the way it positions you as a thought leader in your industry really does these amazing things for your career and your personal brand.
Right.
It's a really fascinating phenomenon, but we tend to trust authority figures who we feel are the authority on a topic, who can create information products and promote them successfully. So there's another non-monetary benefit, you know, from creating an information product, you know, even if you don't make a dime from it.
Right.
You still position yourself as a leader.
Well, I think everything you do when it comes to social media will have some benefit. It may not always be monetary benefit. It may not even be a monetary benefit at all, but it will be beneficial to your brand. Just to bring it around full circle, that social media seminar that we gave as a team a couple of weeks ago, after we gave our points and our presentation, the first question was some lady in the audience just yelled out. I don't think she even raised her hand. She says, "How do you make your money?" and I just kind of laughed at that because that's kind of the traditional way everyone looks at any kind of business is how do you make money? To me, you know, it sounds idealistic, but money is never my number one priority. It's never a goal. I think if you set out to make money and that's your sole purpose of doing business, any kind of business, you are setting yourself up to fail. You have to do what you love and you have to do what you're good at. If those two criteria are met, it will keep you doing what you do for a long time and money will come. It's inevitable. Money can be made in any economic climate, any social situation, anywhere. But I don't think you should start a business or continue on a business solely focusing on money because it will inevitably go bust.
And to be fair, you do make most of your income through client work. As you work with, you have contracts with fashion designers.
Right.
So that's where your main source of revenue is. And I make most of my revenue through client work. I'm sure almost everyone on this listening to this interview makes their money through client, through client work. So what, you know, what benefits do they have, or what motivation would they have to build a social media presence? If their money comes from client work, it's like, yeah, okay, I have some great designs, but you know, ultimately, like they're trying to gain more exposure for themselves.
Yeah. Not only that, but I think 75-89%, I don't even know what the number is, but a large chunk of our client work comes through our social media channels.
That's how they find out about you?
That's how they find out about us. That's how they get to know us. That's how they know they can trust us. And that's how they know they can spend the money on us. Because we position ourselves as relatively expensive compared to a lot of the other alternatives out there. But they choose to go with us for that sole reason. Like you said, we're
social
leaders.
Proof kind of deal. Like they see what they see what's going on. They like it, and they trust you.
That and as they build their brand, they will indirectly benefit from the large social network that we've acquired as well. and it's, I think it's a side benefit to working with us. And I think especially doing service work, I mean, this really is, you know, the best way right now to get your name out there, especially when you start from ground zero and you have nothing. This will give you the marketing power unlike before. You know, 10 years ago, you can't do this by yourself unless you had a lot of money to do. So I think it's valuable. You'll find a way to make money from this, and the money will find you. I don't think it's going to be a problem.
It'll lead to a lot of other opportunities.
Money should not be the end game at all. There are many other things that are much better than money, in my opinion.
You're more motivated to help people.
Yeah, and that should always be the case.
Well, great. Thank you so much. We've learned so much from this interview. I'm glad I got the chance to pick your brain. You know, we talked about how to, the importance of coming up with, laying the groundwork and coming up with a good value proposition, kind of some ways to get started, and you shared your philosophy, the Moki philosophy, meet, organize, create, change, help, and inspire, and kind of gave your feedback about some other paid ways to get following and some of that stuff. So what are some, you know, if I were to take just one or two things from this interview, maybe some things that you want to like stick in my mind or stick in the mind of the person listening to this, what are some specific things or steps or techniques or philosophy or what have you?
Two things I would like for you to take away from this is, number one is to stay positive. So whatever you do, be positive. Have a positive mindset. Work with a positive philosophy. When you deal with people, be positive. And with positivity is infectious, is going to bring positivity back to you. If things are making you negative, maybe that's not really where you want to go into. Nothing is really worth that. So stay positive and be positive. Do everything with that mindset. And
be the light of their day, right? Be the person that makes them smile that day.
Yes. And the other thing is to build that relationship, build that triadic relationship. Don't just help yourself. Help others help themselves. It may sound like a philanthropic type of proposition, but it really isn't. I mean, in the end, you'll benefit from it as well, you know, indirectly, maybe down the road. But if you go at it business-wise, relationships-wise, with the idea of helping others, help others help themselves, you'll succeed.
Right, and even though it seems so woo-woo-y when we talk about the spirituality and the psychological effects of it, but I totally agree, and it really rings true for me that whenever I feel like there's a source of negative energy kind of pervading my life, I really have to get away from it and do whatever I can to purge it so that I can focus back on the positives. And when I do that, that's amazing. All these good things start happening to me. I build good connections, build deals, come together, all that kind of stuff. So I definitely believe in that. And I subscribe to it. I don't know if you're listening to this, what your spiritual or religious beliefs are, but I think we can all agree on that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Danny.
Well, thank you so much, man. It was a pleasure having you here, and thank you for listening.
It's been a pleasure. Good luck.